the internet has been around. The Department of Defense invented it. It's just a means of communication. That's the plumbing. The web is a technology that exists on that. It came around in the early 90s. And Catholics were these pioneers that I mentioned. They were active all along, keeping every step of the way with the technology. Wow.
Welcome to Faith and Culture, a production of the Augustine Institute. Every week, we explore the glory of the Catholic faith and the beauty of Catholic culture. And now, here's the host of Faith and Culture, Joseph Pierce.
Hello and welcome to another Faith and Culture podcast of the Augustine Institute. I'm your host, Joseph Pierce. We've had so many good guests on the Faith and Culture podcast, but I'm especially pleased to invite today's guest. He's Kevin Knight, who will be no stranger to those who know of the great work he does with New Advent and the National Catholic Register. But I want to say something by way of introduction. We'll find out more about him, details later, is that, you know, I am a self-confessed, self-professed, unapologetic technophobe. And technoramus, and of course, if you the technophobia leads to being a technoramus, and a self-declared techno-minimalist, in the sense that I try to do with as little technology as possible. But paradoxically, that's why I admire this man so much, because he's been a pioneer in evangelizing on the World Wide Web. He was right at the forefront of the internet when it first started, and New Advent's been there as a pioneer in evangelizing through the power of the internet. Obviously, the importance of that in this day and age cannot be overstressed. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Kevin Knight to this Faith and Culture podcast. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk a bit about your role. I mean, I do see you very much as a pioneer, as someone, you know, right at the beginning of the internet age, when most of us were asleep to its very existence, you were there as a pioneer, and you saw right from the beginning the importance and the power of this as a tool to evangelize and spread the faith. Would you like to explain how it was, you know, that you got into this technology right at the very beginning?
Well, I was interested in the internet before the web came along, and it was especially through the work of the real pioneers, men who are still whose influence is still felt, Jeff Miras of Catholic Culture, Carl Keating of Catholic Answers. They were there from the very beginning, and it was their work, even before the web, they made it accessible and all the technologies available then, that really, really strengthened my faith and brought me in when I was returning to the church.
If I can ask something here, you know, if you can roll your eyes, because it's an audio podcast, so they won't be able to see that that's what you're doing anyway. But I did profess at the beginning, I'm a technoramus. What is the difference between the internet and the web? Because I was not aware that there was a difference.
Well, the internet has been around. The Department of Defense invented it. It's just a means of communication. That's the pipes.
Okay. You know,
that's the plumbing. The web is a technology that exists on that. It came around in the early 90s with the browsers and so forth. But there were other ways to access the internet before the web came along.
See.
And Catholics were these pioneers that I mentioned. They were active all along, keeping every step of the way with the technology.
Well, I can't admire you and Carl Keating and the others enough for the work you did there. But the particular presence that you have, which many Catholics will know because it's one of the most visited sites in the Catholic world, is newadvent.org. So would you like to tell us something about what New Advent is, what it does, and maybe how and why you were inspired to start it in the first place? Perhaps we should start the last shall be first, perhaps, there.
Well, the way it came about starting it, it really came out of World Youth Day here in Denver in 1993. That sounds cliched, but it Pope John Paul II, his call to evangelize and to carry the gospel, to shout it from the rooftops, came right at the time that the web was just being introduced. And so it seemed like a natural. And at first, I tried to get a lot of the other apostolates out there just tried to get them interested, but it was hard to describe to them what the web was. It wasn't widely used. And so finally, really out of a sense of frustration more than anything else, and just to play around, to experiment, I started putting these materials online. And it just began to build and build.
Well, I love the humility of the understatement there, because obviously it's become a major, major presence, and it's astonishing to me. I know you've had help, but nonetheless, you have been the person that's been at the forefront from the beginning. The thing about it that also I find very attractive is that it works on sort of two stratas, right? It has, a scholarly foundation, the digitization of these texts, these foundational texts of the faith. But also on the other extreme, if you like, is just what's happening on the news that day. So you can go there, and if you like, and skirt the surface of whatever's topical, or plumb the depths of the Summa Theologica by St. Thomas Aquinas. So maybe begin with that foundational stuff. I mean, what inspired you to start digitizing these foundational texts of the faith, and what did it entail, and why did you think it was important in the first place?
Well, it was because I read my way into the faith, and I did so secretly. I didn't want other people to know I was interested. And it was hard. I felt awkward. I remember the day going into the tattered cover bookstore in Denver, not knowing where to begin. There were hundreds of books to choose from, and I wished that I had had somebody to guide me. Fortunately, my guardian angel helped me pick a few good titles, but I wanted to give other people this anonymous experience, the safety of their own room, so to speak. They could come in at any level, whether in the aggregator, the news aggregator, and it's not just hard news. I try to get a lot of interesting features in there as well, just to be as approachable as possible. And then I want to have them just finding themselves diving deeply by accident.
Right. So, okay, because it's there.
It's there. Right. And it's easy to dive deeply, and I hope it's easy to resurface again and come back for another visit.
That's a great image. So, I mean, do you have hyperlinks, for instance, in the news articles that lead to the texts?
No, I sometimes link within the site there, but all the hyperlinks on the top site, the news site, go out to other pages.
Got you. So, but why, I mean, obviously, expound a little bit upon what actual texts of these crucial foundational texts, what texts have you actually digitized to make available online to people?
Well, the foundation, really, it's a three-language Bible. It has the Greek, the Latin, and English. And then, along with it, a large volume of church fathers, which came to me providentially. On the layer above that is the Summa, a little more systematic.
The entirety?
The entirety. And then above that, the Catholic Encyclopedia. It's about 12,000 articles, which just, they're all linked together up and down and across. And then above that, the top of the pyramid is the news page that changes several times a day.
Now, I think I read somewhere that you have some of the papal encyclicals on them as well. Is that true?
Yes, but only some of the earlier ones. Okay. I stopped putting those on once the Holy See started getting such a good collection.
Yeah, you can just go to the Vatican and get the text and most of those.
I try not to reduplicate any.
Right, it's a waste of effort if people can get it easily somewhere else.
Right.
All right. The news item, you said it's not just news items, but so I think of news items as what's happened today, right? CNN and that sort of stuff.
Right.
And thanks be to God, there are alternatives to that in itself. CNN and Fox, we do need good, solid, Catholic, balanced perspective on the news. But you mentioned features. So what would you distinguish between something which you say is a news article, in other words, something which has happened in the last 24 hours that's being reported upon or commented upon, and a feature article?
Well, the feature articles, I have no rules on those. They're just things that catch my eye. I think it's important to show that Catholics also have this broad view of the planet. Everything that's not sin belongs to us.
Right.
And so whether it's an article about the newest airplane technology, nature, everything, all these sort of whimsical articles, these are the kinds of things that are sticky and they keep people coming back. And I want them to associate this this culture, the nature, science, technology, all of these things, to see these as the daughter of the church.
Yeah.
And I think they'll instinctively see the connection.
I love the whole positive nature of that vision. I mean, it's so easy, and we do see it on many other sites, sadly, you know, that it's so easy for Catholics to become angry and bitter and negative. And I think that 9 times out of 10, that's very unattractive, even to Catholics, and certainly to non-Catholics. So do you consciously work at this positive vision, or are you blessed with being a positive sort of person anyway?
Well, I'm a pessimist, but I'm hopeful. So that's what I'm trying to convey is the virtue of hope.
Right.
It really is a joy to get up in the morning and do this. It's a joy to get up in the morning and have the grace of Holy Mass and a beautiful day. So it's wonderful to be at this time in history. I think with myself, as I say, I'm a pessimist, but just the Holy Eucharist going before the Lord, everything else flows from that on the page, even the oddest, quirkiest stories.
Yeah, well, obviously, as long as we have a belief in God's presence in the Eucharist and the Church has been the mystical body of Christ, then there's no reason for us ever to despair. And I'm not going to put a but or a however to that. And so I'm now going to try to phrase this question without putting either of those two words in, which might be more difficult. Many people would say that these are particularly dark times. In the light of history, say the 2,000 years since the time of Christ, would you say that these are particularly dark times, or do you think they're just normal in terms of levels of darkness?
Well certainly in the light of history, it puts things into perspective. We've had far worse persecution.
Yeah.
We've had far worse troubles, heresy and errors and confusion, lack of catechesis, and even the infrequent contact with the sacraments. Yeah. That was the norm through most of history.
Yeah.
And so in that sense, we've got so many graces in our time. But at the same time, we can't deceive ourselves. The things seem light and airy, but there is a lot of darkness and a lot of new darkness,
right.
A new kind of darkness.
There's a new kind of darkness, perhaps heralded by or at least assisted by the new technology, which is why what you're doing is incredibly important. But I see that we're kindred spirits on an even other level now, because part of the large thing I'm doing all the time is say, look, yeah, things are dark now. But, you know, if you went back to the 1930s, you've got the communists in the Soviet Union, you've got the Nazis in Germany, you've got, millions of people being put to death by this totalitarian century. I mean, the 20th century was horrific, and the 21st century may be as bad. We don't know. It's too early days. I read a book fairly recently on the heroes of the Catholic Reformation, and St. Charles Borromeo, when he was going around his diocese in Milan and going off to the mountain villages, was discovering consecrated hosts that were covered in mold, because they just a complete neglect by the clergy and by the faithful, such as were left, you know. So the doom mongers, the harbingers of doomsday, you know, need to have that historical perspective and to see things in that telescopic way that shows us, you know, from the early persecutions right through to the 21st century. This is it's a valley of tears, right? It's a land of exile, but it's also a place where the Church Militant is the mystical body of Christ and is very much present with the assistance of the Church Triumphant. So on those optimistic notes, but before we wind up here, I know that on top of what you do for New Advent, for the last few years, last 3 years, I think, you've been working with the National Catholic Register.
Correct.
For which I've also been blessed to write. So could you perhaps tell us something about your relationship with them?
Well, I'm the blog and social media editor at the Register. And it's been such a blessing, because the team I work with, they're top-notch. It's amazing to be on the editorial call every morning and hear this grand vision of the Church. Everybody, they're so in touch. And the Register in general, it's such an authoritative voice right now.
So, I mean, you're in Denver, they're based, I presume, in Irondale, Alabama, as it's EWTN, although in this day of technology, I'm sure there are people scattered, the diaspora.
But the entire staff, all the editors and writers are all over North America.
Oh, they are. So you have a conference call, you say, every morning?
Every morning.
Wow.
Just to check in, and we just collaborate that way.
Yeah.
And we all share the same vision. We work together well. And again, like I say, it can be doing a project like New Advent, that can be a lonely job. And in the collaborative nature of this, it's a wonderful compliment.
Right. It allows you to actually to have that human relationship with work colleagues, whereas I suppose what you do in New Advent was pretty much you were, it's a lone venture. You're reaching millions of people, but you're actually doing most of it yourself.
A lot of volunteers, a lot of people doing the labor, but it just reminds me of the importance of collaboration, teamwork, and friendship in the church.
Right. Well, Kevin Knight, it's been a real privilege and a blessing for me to actually get to meet you for the first time. We've never met before. I've obviously known of you and admired your work for many years. So I hope we can have you back again as a guest on the Faith and Culture podcast.
I'd love that. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you once again for listening. My name is Joseph Pierce. I'm the host here at the Faith and Culture podcasts of the Augustine Institute. And see you next time. Goodbye and God bless.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Faith and Culture with Joseph Pierce. Faith and Culture is a production of the Augustine Institute. For more information, please visit us at faithandculture.com.